I get it. I've been there before. I have been someone who was addicted to my credit card, swipe or no swiping, Dora the Explorer. So here's the thing about debt. I remember at one point I was like, Tiffany, I was literally out. I had my credit card and I was already in a hole. And I was thinking that, like, you're already in a hole and you're swiping again in my credit card and said, this is a shovel. I am literally digging my own ditch while I'm in the hole. Like, the hole's getting deeper. I wish the hole wouldn't get so deep. Put the shovel down.
That was Tiffany Alici, better known as the Budgetista. And this is Best Breakouts from the Conferences for Women, an audio series that offers timeless insights from our archives to help you advance at work and in life. In this session, Live Richer, Lessons on Financial Wholeness, Tiffany Alici shares her clear 10-step money management system that will teach you how to maximize your money and create a path to achieving financial wholeness. We hope you enjoy it.
Today, we're going to talk about financial wholeness. So we're going to talk about that today and how you can reach financial wholeness. You ready? Let's go. All right. 10 steps to financial wholeness. I actually was a school teacher for over 10 years. So have your notebooks out, pens ready. We're going to have class. All right. So first things first, I like to get to know the crowd a little bit better. So my financial nickname is the Budgetista. It's going to be on every slide, so you can always tag me, feel free. And I got the Budgetista from my baby sister, Lisa. When I was deciding to teach financial education, especially to women, I asked her, what should I call myself? Like the budget diva, the budget mama, because I was always good at budgeting. And she was like, oh, you know, the fashionista? And I said, yeah, yeah. She's like, that's not you. She was like, you don't spend any money. You should be the Budgetista. And now it's stuck. So if you had a financial nickname, what would it be and why? Just a few hands and probably in the front so I can hear really quickly. If you had a financial nickname, I'll give you an example. Someone told me their nickname was Treadmill because she felt like she was running toward her financial goals, but never went anywhere. Right? So if you had a financial nickname, and I used to be a teacher, I have no problem saying you in the beautiful striped dress. Yes. If you had a financial nickname, what would it be and why? Spendinista. Well, we know why. Maybe two more people. What would it be and why? Yes. Okay. Woodland Fargo. She says a play on her last name in Wells Fargo because she's always lending money. She's a family bank. Okay. One more. Who else? Worry Ward. Okay. Always worried if you're going to have enough money. You must be my sister because I feel like that too. All right. So financial wholeness, what is it? So when I was a preschool teacher, I was well on my way to financial wholeness. That means I was holistically working toward my financial goals. So there's many components to financial wholeness. Your income, budget, savings, debt, credit, insurance, retirement. And then the recession hit and I lost my job. So many of my friends lost their job, but I thought I'm a teacher. Teachers don't lose their jobs. But we were a nonprofit-based school and 3 days before the new school year started, and you know you're a teacher, you're like broke during the summer. But like, 'cause many teachers don't get paid during the summer because you're not working. And so 3 days before the new school year was starting, they called us to say, we lost our funding. There's no more school. And I was like, what am I going to do? And so I ended up losing my home. I bought a condo when I was 25. I couldn't afford the mortgage anymore, so I lost the home. I ended up moving back home with my parents, which was great fun, especially when you're 29, I can assure you. And it was just really difficult. And it left me almost like with PTSD. Is that what it is? Right? Post-traumatic stress syndrome. And I didn't recognize that until after. So then I started my business, the Budgetista. I started doing well. I had money in the bank. And the more money I had saved, the more stressed and freaked out I felt. And I thought, why? Tiffany, you are this close to financial freedom. Because financial freedom means having more than enough money, right? Not to have to work. And honestly, I'm this close to having that much money saved and invested. But I felt even more scared than when I was teaching preschool. And I couldn't understand why. And I realized is that I was chasing financial freedom, but that's not enough, that I really needed to focus on financial wholeness. It's wholeness is not just about the money in the bank. It's other components. And I'm going to show you right now. Here are the other components. Your money list, automatic wealth, putting the shovel down, the noodle plan, scoring high, boss up, money team, protect yourself. I'm rich. leaving a legacy, but I'm going to explain what each of these are and how you can start to reach them. First thing first, money list. Your money list really is just your budget. Here is how my four-step creating a budget plan. I have a book called The 1 Week Budget. So here's how you create a basic budget. Step one, list everything you spend money on. This is your money list. Step two, write down your monthly spending on each thing on your money list. So if it's rent, it's the same every month, but maybe it's your hair. So for example, I have locks. I get them done. I want to say every 3 months, I get them retightened. Cost me about $100 each time. That's $100 divided by 3 months. That's about $33 a month. Your money list should reflect money in, money out within a month's time. So if you eat out, let's just do breakfast, for example. Let's just say you do breakfast twice a week and breakfast costs you $10. So that's $20 a week. There are 4 weeks in a month. So 4 times 20 is 80. You would put $80 on your money list. So that is first part of your financial wholeness plan is you must have a budget. I'm the budgetista, right? You must have a budget. The budget is your financial foundation. Next, automatic wealth. I want you to be an automatic, well, potential millionaire. So here's one of my favorite tools that I have for achieving automatic wealth. So one, if you have a typical job, there's probably a 401k plan or 403b plan or some sort of plan like that. And if not, and even so, if you do, here's one of my favorite tools as you're automating your wealth and automating your retirement. This is called a target date fund. So a target date fund is usually like a mutual fund. So here's what a mutual fund is. I want you to imagine you're in the elevator. This elevator is just plain regular stocks. It has one cable holding the elevator up. When the stock goes up, the elevator goes really fast. When the stock goes down, the elevator plummets to the ground. Mutual fund has multiple cables holding that elevator up, multiple stocks and bonds holding that elevator up. If one stock goes up, the elevator doesn't go as quickly because it has multiple cables that it needs to accommodate. But if one cable goes down, the elevator doesn't fall as quickly because there are multiple cables holding it up, right? So a target date fund typically is a mutual fund with a target date. Speaking of Target, this dress is from Target. These shoes are from Target. I'm Target down, right? So target date fund, this is why I like a target date fund. Because if you're like, I don't know how to invest, who feels overwhelmed by like, I don't know how to invest, right? You don't need to necessarily know. Because a target date fund will say, what's your name? Baby Lisa, right? Baby Lisa, when do you want to retire? I want to retire when I'm 60 years old, and that'll be in 2030. I don't know. So you would set your target date fund for 2030, and you probably would answer some questions about kind of like your aptitude and how you feel about investing. Are you someone who is a more conservative investor? Are you more aggressive? And then the fund would choose for you. And the closer you get to the target date, the more your fund would become more conservative. Because ideally, the closer you get to retirement or pulling the money out, you don't want to have your money in risky stocks and bonds, right? And so that's what's so great about a target date is that you can keep putting money in and it will adjust and balance itself for you. So if you don't know anything else when it comes to automated investing, just remember target date fund. All right, next. Put the shovel down. What does that mean? I had been someone who was addicted to my credit card, swipe or no swiping, Dora the Explorer, right? So here's the thing about debt. I remember at one point I was like, Tiffany, I was literally out. I had my credit card and I was already in a hole. And I was thinking that, like, you're already in a hole and you're swiping again my credit card and said, this is a shovel. I am literally digging my own ditch while I'm in the hole. Like the hole's getting deeper. I wish the hole wouldn't get so deep. Put the shovel down. So I literally had to put my credit card down and stick to using cash on my debit card for a year or two until I paid off my credit card. There are two methods that I like for paying off debt. There is the snowball method and the avalanche method. Snowball, avalanche. Here's how the snowball method works. It's the method if you are more emotionally inclined when it comes to your finances. I use the snowball method because I don't know if you could tell, I'm a little emotional, right? So the snowball method allows you to have success more quickly. So imagine you're like, okay, I'm going to start exercising. You know, ladies, we've all done this. I'm going to start exercising. I'm going to run 3 miles tomorrow. That's a lot. How about I'm going to walk 3 blocks, right? That's what the snowball method is. It means that you're going to focus on the debt with the smallest balances first, and you're going to pay them off. And as you pay them off, you're going to use whatever money you were paying off the debt with the smallest balance and put it toward the next smallest balance. And you're going to start to snowball all of that money. Slowly but surely, you'll start to pay off and get to the higher debt. So I'll give you an example. Let's just say you owe $25, $50, $200. So $25, you're giving it $10 a month. Everything else is getting its minimum. The $25 after 2.5 months is paid off. You're going to take that $10 a month and put it toward the $50 debt. So the $50 debt is going to get its minimum, the $25 debt minimum, and it's going to slowly be paid off much faster. And then once you pay off that $50 debt, you're going to take the $10 from the $25 debt, the $25 that you're paying the $50 debt, and then put it toward the $100 debt. Do you see? So you remember like in the movies when the snowball got bigger and bigger, like when Bugs Bunny pushed it down the hill? Right? So that's what the snowball method does, is that it starts to build momentum and pick up snow, which is really your minimums along the way. And by the time you get to the biggest debt, you have a bigger payment. I like the snowball method because it makes sense to me emotionally. But here's what makes sense mathematically, the avalanche method. The avalanche method is when you pay down the debt with the highest interest rate first. Here's why, because that's the debt that's the most expensive. So, you owe $100 here, interest rate is 20%. You owe $3,000 here, interest rate is 5%. So you would focus on the $100 debt first with the avalanche method because it has the higher interest rate. That means it's costing you the most amount of money. Now, it works out if the $100 debt has the higher interest rate, but what if the $100 debt doesn't have the higher interest rate? It's the $3,000 debt. The reason why I like the snowball method is because it might take me a long time to pay off that $3,000 debt. I'd rather wipe out the $100 debt while I can get to it. But there's nothing wrong with either one of them, and you could do a mix. But either way, you should have a method for paying down debt. Because here's the thing that I want you to remember. Tweet this, write this, tattoo it on your arm. Debt-free does not equal wealth. Debt-free does not equal wealth. I have a 3-year-old nephew. He has no debt. He's broke. Sorry, Roman. Auntie loves you. Because sometimes we are so focused on debt-free. Why? And now, I don't mean that I don't want you to pay off your debt. I don't want for that to be your main focus. You should have a plan for debt, let the plan work its way out automatically, and then focus on growing wealth. Because debt-free does not equal wealth. I want you to have a plan for debt and let that plan work itself, but put your energy into growing wealth. All right, next, 4, the noodle plan. How many have heard of emergency savings? Well, this is the noodle plan for emergency savings. So the ramen noodle plan is this. If you had to live at the lowest financial baseline that you could possibly live at. So if you had to cut off cable, do your own hair, whatever that looks like. I'm not saying live there, but you should know that number. Like, let's just say your life cost you currently $5,000 a month, but your noodle budget, you could get your life down to $3,500, right? So I'm not saying live at $3,500, but know that number and then save at least 3 months worth of $3,500. Because if you lose your job or you go through some traumatic financial event, I need you to drop down and get your noodle on. Because you're like really optimistic. You lose your job. And you don't cut off cable right away. You lose your job, still going to get your nails and your hair done. You lose your job, still spending money at Target. But I want you to know that as soon as financial trauma hits, I want you to drop down and get down to your noodle budget, your financial baseline. And you'll know at least you'll have 3 months worth of savings for that current noodle budget. It's really important that you should know how big you can go, but it's also important to know how small you can go temporarily. And if you don't know that, then you're not going to be sure how much do I absolutely need. I personally think that you should have at least 6 months, but 3 months is what the experts say. But here's the thing. You should have as many months as it would take for you to replace your income. My mom, who's retired, when she was a nurse, I remember her hospital closed But everyone in the city knew the hospital was closing. But nurses are in such high demand that before the hospital closed its door, she had like 10 job interviews, 10 job offers. Every day I would come home from high school and it'd be another phone call. Like, people fly to the Caribbean to look for nurses because nurses are in such high demand. My mother doesn't need 6 months worth of her noodle budget because she could replace her income like that. My sister is an engineer, mechanical engineer. It took her 2 years to find her first job and then another 2 years to find the next one. She's going to need more than 3 months. So you have to know what your industry can do, okay? Important fact, I want you to save your noodle budget in an online-only savings account. Here's why. It makes your money inconvenient, and inconvenient money gets saved. Here's how. I love Target, clearly. This was old Tiffany. I've reformed my ways. I'd be at Target. I'd say, ooh, love that dress. Love those shoes. Getting it even though I came for toilet tissue. I'm there. I look at my checking account. I'm in line. Checking account says, girl, now you know. And I'm like, whatever, whatever, whatever. Negativity. I look at savings. Savings says, I thought you said you want to go to Paris. I'm like, shh. Just give me my money. So sometimes if I'm really gangsta, like, she'll be ringing it up and I'm making a transfer, beads of sweat. Like, can I make it? Can I make it? We've all done that, right? And you're like, did it! So when I finally realized, Tiffany, you have a problem. So I put my money now in an online-only savings account, not the account where my checking account is, which is a brick-and-mortar bank, right? Because here's why. At minimum, 24-hour wait. The next time I went to Target, I was like, okay, checking account once again, negativity. And I was like, that's all right, I'm going to transfer. Oh, no. I would have to sleep at Target for 24 hours before I got my money. Well, no dress for Tiffany. So that's the great thing about having an online-only savings account, because of that wait, and they don't have the brick and mortars of a regular bank, so they pay out more interest. So like a regular bank is giving you 0.00000001%, right? Not literally, but literally like 0.001%. Honestly, that's what a regular bank is getting you. And then I think an online-only bank, they're averaging right now around like 2%. And so you're going to make more money on your savings. So that's where you're going to want to keep your noodle budget. So did you know that your friend who always mentions, oh, I've got an 800 credit score. Nobody cares, Sarah. It doesn't matter. You want to know why? Because 750, well, really 740, but 740, 750 is the beginning of perfect credit. Meaning that when you and Sarah go to borrow, you get the same rate. So next time Sarah brags about her 800, 850, nobody cares. As long as you get to 750, you're going to get the same rate because they look at credit as a range. So 750 is the beginning of A-plus credit. So it's going to be important that you keep your credit score strong. Here's one of the ways that you can raise your credit score. You have to remember this. Your credit score is your financial GPA. It is your GPA, meaning that it's an average of your financial grades. So people will say, Tiffany, if I pay off this card, what will my grade be? What will my score be? I don't know. I don't know what you got freshman year. I don't know what you got junior year. I don't know what you got. So there's no way for me to know, because you got 1A in basket weaving senior year, what your GPA is going to be. Because it's a mix of all of your choices. The more grades you have, the less one grade is going to make a big difference. When I met my husband, his credit score was like 630. Ask me how I know. I asked. This is a great date. What's your credit score? He said, I don't know. I'm like, oh, no problem. He's like, you're kidding, right? I'm like, no, I'm not kidding. And so it was like a 630. And he had one credit card on his credit report. And he had like one credit card. I don't even know if he had a card note at that time. But basically, he had one grade. And it was like a, basically like a C minus D plus. Because he had one credit card, it was nearly maxed out. And I said, why? It was a secured card, which is basically like a credit card with training wheels. You get a secured card because you're going to use it to help raise your credit score. And he said, I got it so I can prove and raise my credit score so I can prove that I can pay back. So I got it. It was like maybe $500 limit. And I put $450 on it. And I've been paying back $25 a month. And I'm like, that's not how that works. You know, like the old lady's like, that's not how any of this works. Who told you that? And he was like, that's not how it works. I'm like, no, that when you're maxed out, it severely brings down your score. He said, okay. I said, do you have $450? He said, yes. I said, let's pay it off. So he paid it off. And then the next time we were at the bank, he was like, babe, let's go. I'm like, what happened? He was like, there's an extra $500 in my account. I'm like, that seems suspicious. And they're going to come get their money eventually. So I asked him, he's like, oh, no, ask her. I'm like, what do you plan on spending this money? So it turned out it was his secured card. Meanwhile, his money. Because the way a secured card works is that you secure that card with your own money. So 6 months, a year ago, they took his $500, put it in a money market account or a savings account, gave him a credit card and said, use it wisely. If you don't, we're just going to take the money that we have put up. So if you use your secured card wisely about 6 months to a year, and it's with a bank, they will give you your $500 back and make it a regular credit card. So they had just given him his money back. I said, see, you would have spent all your money on nothing instead of me. But what he learned was pay off something in full. So his credit score jumped tremendously. In about 3 months, it jumped over 100 points. In 3 months, why? He only had one grade. Me, I've got like 20 grades. So me paying off one credit card one time is not going to be enough to take me from a C to an A, not in 3 months. So instead, what I did was, because I had an 802 credit score when I bought my condo, and then the recession hit, couldn't afford my mortgage. So then you not paying brings down your score significantly. And so I had a 547. And I remember I found out because I was teaching a class. Thank goodness it wasn't this big. It was like a class, like maybe like 20 people. And I was showing them, how do you check your credit score online? Can you imagine? So I'm like, and this is hell, because last time I checked, it was like 802. And let me show you how to check your credit score. As a matter of fact, we'll use Martin as an example. 547. I was like, that's my sister Tracy. Sorry, Tracy. I couldn't believe it. I was like, when did that happen? I was like, there's other Tia Liches out there. I'm not the only one. So, but what it was I had all of these dings against my credit score. And so what I did was I took a credit card and I did something what I call jump like Jordan. So I'm 39, going on 40. So what I did was I said, okay, how do I offset these bad grades, which are I didn't pay my mortgage because I didn't have a job. So I took one credit card that had already been paid off and I put, it was either my gym membership, it was like Planet Fitness for like 10 bucks a month. And I said, hey, Planet Fitness, instead of taking the money from my debit card account, I want you to charge this credit card. And I said, hey, debit card account, I want you to pay this credit card off every month. And so doing that loop, having a card charged and paying it off every month, I did that with two cards. And it took about a year and a half, but I raised my credit score back up to, it was like 750. And now I'm back in the 800s. So paying off a debt in full, the amount doesn't matter. They like to see the habit of paying off a debt in full. It could be $500, it could be $5,000, it could be $5. Pay off a debt in full every single month. And I like to use a credit card because I don't have to think about it. And I only use that card for that. I literally call that my Jump Like Jordan card. I put that card home and I let that card get paid off every single month. The key is to pay after the statement date. Meaning after they issue you the statement, it means they told the credit bureaus she used the card. And then obviously before the due date or by the due date. Because if you pay it off too quickly in the beginning, I was charging it, paying it right away. And I was like, it's not helping. It's because it was never recorded as being used. So paying after the statement date, if you don't know when that is, it just means when they issue you the statement and then by or before the due date. Another thing you want to do is for your credit score is to, I want you to open up a bills account if you don't already. So that same bank that you're already at right now, you have a checking account that's attached to your debit card. And you're going to have another checking account that has no debit card. Why? You cannot be trusted. Not when it comes to your bill money, right? So typically that account that has a debit card, I like to call that my deposit / spending account. The money lands in that account. So I get paid, maybe grandma slips me $100 for my birthday, right? So that lands in that regular checking account attached to my debit card. It gets deposited in my deposit account. And then every pay period, I transfer some money to my bills account. And the great thing about that is that I used to be the overdraft queen. Every week, I'm like, I'm always overdrafting. It's because I had all my money in one place. But now that I separate my bill money, then I let my bills get paid automatically. I don't let them come in typically. Typically, instead, I transfer out because sometimes they take too much or they make a mistake. But the good thing about automating your bills like that is that 35% of your score is payment history. So if you want to raise your credit score, you need to pay bills on time. If you want to pay bills on time, automate it. If you do that for yourself, separating your spending money from your bill money. So I have a loop. Money lands in my deposit account. Awesome. Some money goes to my bills account. Bills account pays bills. Some money goes into my online only savings account. Awesome. And then what's left is money that I can spend. So if I want to use my grocery money on Beyonce, I can. Right? Because why? I know bills have been paid, savings been saved. And hopefully, before it's even landed in my deposit account, I've already had money taken out for retirement. Do you see that's the loop? It's like money comes into your life, retirement money goes off, then lands into your deposit account, then splits to bills, bills get paid, then some of that money goes to savings, savings get saved. What's left is what you can spend. And when you say, I don't have any more money to spend, you know you've put aside money for retirement, you've paid your bills, you've saved. You can spend without guilt. Six, I want you to boss up. Okay, here's the thing. Multiple streams of income are really where it's at. It's very difficult to manage a household these days with only one stream of income. The average American millionaire has seven streams. You don't need seven streams. But I remember when I used to be a school teacher, I tutored and I babysat. Even if you don't have multiple streams, or if you're like, you know, I make plenty, that's okay. But you should at least have in your mind, if I had to do a side hustle, just in case. I'm someone who likes to have a just in case in the back of my mind, right? Like if I had to do a side hustle, like even now to this day, I think to myself, if the business is not doing well, I don't like doing financial one-on-ones because typically people are not really ready, but I could do them and make enough money. Or I could go back to babysitting, right? I taught for 10 years. You know you let me babysit your kids. So I always have that in my back of my mind, but when you're thinking about side hustle, here are the side hustle rules. One, I want you to look for what you have a degree in. So I've got my degree in business and I've got my master's in education. So it means it pays more. People pay for your degrees. So that's one of the rules when you're looking for a side hustle. Another rule, look for a side hustle that's related to what you're already currently doing at your main job. The reason why I used to babysit and tutor is because I was already a teacher. There's no learning curve. Because getting a side hustle, unless it's something that you're passionate in, getting a side hustle and something that's totally unrelated to what you do, you're going to have to learn a whole new skill set. If that's not your passion and you're not trying to go into that, it's wasted energy. So getting a side hustle in something that you're currently doing, so it makes it easier. So a friend of mine, he is a maintenance man for a building. So he does handyman work on the side. He doesn't have to learn anything new. And then three, go deep instead of wide. I learned this from an Uber driver in Atlanta. Not even 6 months ago, we were driving. I said, this is a nice car. He said, yeah, I'm going to get a new one. I was like, no, don't get a new car. They're a big waste of money. And he was like, no, I drive Uber under my business. And I was like, okay, tell me more. And he was like, it's a write-off because last year I made $70,000 driving Uber. 70. I was like, hold up. How? And he said, so in his day job or his main job that he didn't want to do anymore, he was a financial analyst. And he said, I realized, I can analyze Uber and this job the same way I used to at my old job. And every single ride he did for 6 months when he first started driving Uber, he had like this little tablet where he would put down, it was sunny, a man, two kids, how long the ride was, where he dropped them off, all of that for 6 months. And then he ran some sort of report where he got to see, when it's rainy, I make the most money in Buckhead. I was like, whoa, right? Or like when it's sunny, the airport is the perfect place to be. And so he went deep versus wide because I'm going to do this and this and this and this, 10,000 different things. But instead, he was like, if I'm going to do this side hustle, I'm going to lean into it. So I want you to think about that. What does that look like? How can I go deep versus doing 10,000 things? Can I babysit multiple kids? Instead of just baking or being a caterer, can I teach cooking lessons? Like there's a woman, like my makeup artist that I have in New Jersey. I told her, I said, you're here anyway. What if you came early and offered makeup lessons before you did my makeup? Or what if you've done my makeup, like she does my makeup because I do like a lot of speaking and stuff. She does my makeup at least twice a week. And you already know, I'm always like, oh, I love that eyeshadow. Why don't you have an extra one? I would pay the 20% premium. So let's just say she bought the eyeshadow for $20 and she sells it to me for $25. You're here already. Why not go deep? Why not add things on? She was like, you would pay that? I'm like, yes, so I don't have to go to the store. And so just think about that as you're doing your side hustle, going deep instead of wide. Money team! The money team. But first things first, in your money team, you should have your immediate family, kids, significant other, whoever is affected by or affects the income in the household, right? Because you have to have buy-in. That's important. You need an accountant, likely, especially as you get a little bit older and deeper. But honestly, a financial advisor and financial planner are going to be your friend. I waited too long to get a financial advisor, financial planner. People think you have to have a ton of money. You don't. There are two ways that typically a financial advisor and financial planner get paid. So financial advisors typically can sell you like insurance, like they take care of your money, but they also sell products and stuff typically. Financial planners will look at your life holistically. So I have a financial planner, but it depends on where you are in life and what you need. But there are two main ways they get paid. One, you could pay a flat fee. That's what you think of when you think of the wealthy, like they're paying thousands of dollars a year for financial advice. I couldn't afford that, so I never got a planner. Now I realize like that's not necessarily true. You can have a financial advisor or a financial planner that gets paid a percentage of the assets they manage for you. So that means you're not paying them anything up front, but let's just say you have $10,000 and you should not be paying more than 1% because you can negotiate that. I've had people negotiate. I've seen people negotiate down to 0.25% because I remember I had a financial planner. I was interviewing him and he was like, oh, I'm 1.25% to manage your money. And I was like, no, I don't want to pay more than 1%. He said, okay. I was like, oh, I mean, I don't want to pay more than, burn it, right? So you can negotiate. So if you don't have the money to pay up front, it's still a good place to start. I want you to start. We all say this, but I wish I would have started when I was like 19, 20. And then as you get a little bit more money, then you can switch over to the ideal, which is to pay the flat fee. It could be $2,000 a year. It might be $5,000 a year. It can go up to $20,000 a year. And you might not be there yet, but that's okay because there are financial planners and advisors, and honestly, most of them get paid based upon the assets of yours that they're managing. So find a financial planner advisor. So here's how I found my perfect financial planner. It took me a long time. I created this financial doc and I put everything in it. How much money my husband and I made, how much we had saved, any credit card debt that we might have, our goals, our dreams, the house, how much that was, everything in this financial doc. And then I asked all of my friends who had financial planners, can you make suggestions for me? I'm in a financial group, Facebook group online. Anybody have a financial planner they think is awesome? So maybe there was like 15 people sent to me. And I sent them an email saying, hi, my name's Tiffany. I'm looking for a financial planner. But before we could sit down and talk, because everyone wants to get on the phone, I created a doc that I want you to review to see if you'd be a fit. Let them vet themselves out. There were people who went to the doc and they were like, oh, she's a lot. I am. And so they left, which is fine. You want that. And then there are people who are like, oh, I focus only on doctors. And then, oh, you know, I only do entrepreneurs or whatever. And so it went from 15 down to 8. And then with the 8, I can compare apples to apples because as you're talking to each one, you're forgetting, oh, I forgot to tell her I want to buy a house. And I forgot to tell this one that my car is repossessed. And I forgot to tell this one. But with the document, we can review that. Do you see? So creating that doc is good for you, but it's also going to help you to vet your financial people in your life that you want to work with. Protect yourself before you wreck yourself. Okay, make sure you have enough insurance. Insurance is everything. So I didn't realize, but I'm underinsured. My financial planner, shout out to Angelie, was like, you don't have enough insurance. So here's some insurances. There's life insurance, disability, health, pet, homeowners, car insurance, renter's insurance. Now you want to do there's a free checkup tool at this website, Policy Genius. They should cut me a check. But I just really like them. They don't cut me any checks. But I like Policy Genius because you can kind of type in all the stuff about yourself and they'll tell you what insurances you're likely lacking in. But you're going to want to protect yourself because here's the thing. If, you know, just think about driving a car uninsured. Like insurance allows for you to pay for major emergencies that you would not necessarily have the money for out of pocket. But it also helps to protect your wealth over time. Like insurance is one of the main ways that the uber wealthy pass down wealth from generation to generation. It's true. So grandma might buy insurance policy for grandson, a $1 million policy. but it's because they're thinking about it in the future. So you might think, well, that's great, but grandson is not going to be able to use that $1 million because it's life insurance on his life. Grandma's looking out for her great-grandson. There are literally people who do that, that it is the grandparents' job to get the insurance policy for the grandson, so that way great-grandson can have that $1 million policy passed on to them when their grandson passes away. Isn't that amazing? So I'm Nigerian. That's like Brooklyn, always in the house. Anybody else Nigerian? Okay, because somebody's always Nigerian. So I'm Nigerian, and one of my uncles has a palm tree farm. And it's beautiful. And he's wealthy. And I was asking my dad, well, how come he's wealthy, but the rest of my family in Nigeria is not wealthy? He said, because someone had the wherewithal to plant this palm tree farm knowing they weren't going to benefit. Because it takes almost 100 years for a palm tree, not like palm trees like in Florida. I'm talking about palm that gives you palm oil. And palm oil is really valuable, especially in Africa. It takes about 100 years for a palm tree to grow, to produce the palm nuts that produce this liquid gold. But the person that planted that palm tree farm was never going to see the benefit of that because they weren't going to be there 100 years later. But as a result, my uncle and his kids and his kids and his kids and his kids are all good. We have to do that. You have to do that. You could do that with insurance. If you want to build a financial legacy, if you want to make sure that you're passing on or creating, I want with me to start this, like, not that my parents don't have any money, but like we didn't grow up. I mean, my parents were immigrants when they came here. But I want with me that there's a shift where like we don't have to work quite as hard, that there's money that's going from generation to generation to generation. And one of those ways, insurance doesn't just protect you, it helps you to legally pass on wealth. All right. It's all about your net worth and making sure it's positive. So what is net worth, to be clear? Net worth is what you own, your assets, versus what you owe your liabilities. I own this house. So cute. House is worth $500,000, let's just say. I owe $400,000 on that house. My net worth, let's just say if it's just the house, is $100,000. It's not $500,000. So your net worth is what you own versus what you owe. Many people have a negative net worth because they own a bunch of stuff, but they owe a lot on it, right? So like right after college, you graduate, you get yourself a car bill and a blender bill and a mattress bill and all these other things. So all of a sudden you have these things, but you owe on all these things. The key is to increase what you own and slow down with what you owe. Can you drive that car a little bit longer and pay it off? Do you have to get a new car every 3 or 4 years? Can you save and get that mattress instead of putting it on your card? Do you have to put that dress on your Macy's card? Can you just save for it and get it? So I want you to reduce what you owe and increase what you own. That's net worth. And it's critical because your net worth is going to allow you to have some wiggle room in your life. It's going to alleviate a lot of that stress that you have at night when you're feeling like we're not going to be okay. It's because your net worth is likely not positive. So you can calculate that when you get home. All right. Number 10, leaving a legacy. Estate planning, not just for the rich. Estate planning is important. It just means, what do you want to happen with your stuff when you are not here? What kind of legacy do you want to leave? What kind of financial legacy do you want to leave? Here's the components of an estate plan. Because most people are like, an estate plan, I'm not rich. I'm not Oprah. I'm not Serena Williams, right? But no, an estate plan is going to be a critical part of your life. So a will or trust. You don't have to be rich to have a will or a trust. Prince did not have a will. Prince! That's crazy. He passed away and all of his money went to his sister. And maybe that's not what he wanted, but it didn't matter because he did not have instructions, legal instructions, a will. A beneficiary's form. I'm going to give you some homework, but this is one of the homeworks you're going to do. Add beneficiaries to your accounts today. You can literally go to your bank accounts and look for where it says beneficiaries and add your sister, your kids, your aunt, your mom, your dad. Add them. That way, if something were to happen to you, they will have access to your bank accounts without the struggle. Make sure you update your beneficiaries. When you first got your life insurance plan, your beneficiary, you put your beautiful baby boy on it. Meanwhile, now you have 3 kids. And if you pass away, the other kids are like, oh, word, mom? Let Jacob bury him. So you want to update your beneficiaries. Power of attorney, right? Who's going to act on your behalf? Do you have a really responsible friend, a really responsible sibling? You want to identify who's going to be the power of attorney, especially when you're not able to act, or if you're ill or you're injured or you're just not here. A living will. This is really important because a living will is basically, I'm still here, but this is what I want. Maybe you say, look, you do not resuscitate. Maybe you're like, something really happens to me and I'm not able to enjoy life fully. I want you to cut the cord. Whatever that looks like, you want a living will. So that way you know and they know what kind of medical treatment that you want. And a letter of intent. So this is left to whoever you've chosen. The power of attorney is not necessarily the person that's going to execute your will. You'd have to choose that person as well. But a letter of intent just makes it clear, like, hey, I've already had this in my will, but just a quick letter to say, this is what I want. This is even like what I want my funeral to look like. This is how I want my burial to go. Just to be clear, I do want my children to split the house evenly, or I don't want them to sell it, whatever that looks like. So these are the components of your estate plan. And not that big of a deal. Like creating a will or trust, there are online companies that could do so for you for a nominal fee. But having that, like my dad is in his, like in his 70s. I'm like, Daddy, the will still says I'm 10. And then I go to Uncle Tony. Like, you need to update that. You know, people are afraid. I get it, because mortality is not something that we want to address. But you want to make sure that how you want your money to be passed along, it happens. All right? Look at, for all that we went through, tell me what percentage of financial wholeness have you achieved? Right? So I'm going to give you like, just like add it up real quick. Like, do you have a budget? Are you automating your retirement? Do you have a debt pay down plan? You don't have to be debt free, just a plan. Do you have savings, the noodle budget, the noodle plan? Is your credit score at least a 750? Do you have more than one stream of income coming into your household? If it's you and your spouse, awesome. If it's just you, do you have more than one? Do you have someone on your money team? Do you have any financial professional in your life? Do you have the right amount of insurance? Is your net worth positive? And do you have an estate plan? So what I like about this is that you can start adding those things yourself. Now, can you see why having a ton of money is not enough? Why I told you when I first started that I was saving, and I was good. But then I realized I was still freaked out about money, because it wasn't just about having enough money in the bank. It's about these core components of your finances. So I have this free online challenge that I've done for the last 5 years. It's called the Live Richer Challenge. Over 800,000 women worldwide have taken one or more of the challenges. This is one of my favorite ones. So the net worth one, you don't have to do it alone. If you go to lrcnetworth.com, you can sign up. It's an online course. It's totally free. But if you're looking for, because I have a savings edition, a credit edition, fundamentals. So if you go to liverichachallenge.com in general, you can see all of them. So there's 5 free courses, because it is my aim to provide financial tools and resources to anyone that should want to do better. And I like to provide them for free when I can. Homework, because you know, the teacher in me is like, you got some homework. All right. First thing first, I want you to create a budget. I'm going to actually, like I said, if you go to thebudgetnita.com and click contact me and type in the subject line, PA financial wholeness, then I'm going to send you the 1-week budget, my book that I've written for free. Well, the first chapter, and I'm going to send you the money list that you need to fill it out. So that's homework. I want you to create a budget. No excuses. 2, add beneficiaries to your account. You can do that at lunch today. Your bank account should have someone on there that would be able to take it if you're not here. Okay? That's 2. 3, automate at least one component of your finances. Is it going to be savings? Are you going to open an online-only savings account and automate that? And then 4, sign up for the free Live Richer Challenge. All right. We did good. We're going to take some questions. 10 minutes for questions. Yes.
I have a question about your savings versus paying off debt.
Yes.
And should I use some of my savings to pay debt?
So it should happen at the same time. Here's why. Debt-free with no savings is debt. So let's just say you have a car and you owe $2,000 on it, and you have $2,000 in your savings account. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to take the savings account. I'm going to pay off the car. Yay! No more debt. Car breaks down. What are you going to do? You're going to use your credit card to fix your car. So you're going to be right back in debt. So I always say that keep your noodle budget at least 3 months. Then you can start putting more aggressively toward debt. But you should be saving and putting toward debt at the same time.
Thank you. You're excellent.
Thank you.
So for a woman that is more financially set than their husband, mm-hmm. do you have any advice on, say, a man that likes to make investments because, say, they are interest-free investments. However, you're then increasing debt still, and they maybe don't quite understand that concept.
Yes.
Is there a good way to maybe pass on good debt-free living to your significant other?
It's hard because, so I make more than my husband. I feel like so many of us make more than our significant others. And he wasn't less savvy when I first met him. And I used to try to bully him into, like, not like that. It doesn't work.
Right.
So I had to find what I call the common denominator. So I had to be like, what's the thing that he's never going to say no to? So before I met my husband, he had a daughter. She's now 13. But at the time, she was like 6 or 7. And I remember that was the one thing that we could get on the same page with. So I'd always be like, well, we should save more for Alyssa. Absolutely. I want to buy this thing. Or we could put it toward Alyssa's bank account. You know what? Absolutely. So I used putting aside for Alyssa as like a place that we could both agree upon. And then slowly but surely, like, well, we can save for Alyssa and vacation. We can save for Alyssa and our wedding because I need to get married. Well, married, all right? We can, but you see what I mean? So I had to get to a place where he didn't feel like I was forcing him. It was an absolutely. And then slowly grow from there and find other common denominators. And then he was more open to seeing things my way, our way, right? So that's what I would say is find something where there's no pushback. And then two, maybe allotting a certain amount of money, doesn't have to be much, for those types of investments. Where that way, because I mean, you still, I mean, he's an adult, so you still want to give some leeway as to like, well, maybe it's I get $100 a month to do whatever with, you get $100 a month to make whatever investments. So my husband and I have discretionary, like, kind of play money. And for your husband, maybe it's to make those type of investments, but he can't go above and beyond that. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I know you talked a lot about multiple streams of income.
Yep.
And I know that investing in like real estate is like one of those streams of income. What is your advice, or do you have any resources that would be beneficial for a 23-year-old who's looking to invest in real estate and create those multiple streams of income through?
Have you ever owned a house before?
No.
So I would, one, look for your local bank to see if they have a first-time home buyer program. There's a great one called NACA, N-A-C-A. I don't know what it stands for. I think it's like neighborhood, some or other. But what I like about NACA is that it is a first-time home buyer program. If you go through it, they will actually lower your interest rate. So let's just say interest rates right now are 5%. Let's just say they're not, they're lower. But you could actually get a loan because you went through NACA for 2%. So I've known people to get a multifamily house for their first house with the help of NACA. So now they've got a house with a super low interest rate and it's multifamily and they've started to invest. So definitely taking a course, but NACA has, I would probably take two, a first-time homebuyer course with a local bank, but also look at NACA and sign up. I've heard really great things about them.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Hi, I was just wondering if you have any advice for like a first-year college student on like making advancements and like building your net worth or planning for future.
Yes.
No more.
Are you able to stay home?
Yeah, I stay at home right now.
Stay home! Let me tell you something. That is the greatest. I mean, my parents are Nigerian and strict, and whether you are 5 or 50, the rules are the same. Be in this house by midnight. They don't care. Right? But I stayed home for 1 year after college. I was making $14 an hour. I think I was making like $900 a month. But because I wasn't paying any rent, I was staying home. I was able to save. No, I think I was making like, I forget how much I was making a month, but I was saving like $900 a month. And I saved $10,500 that year. I used half of it to buy a car that was 2 or 3 years old from the auction. So no car note. And when you don't have a car note, your car insurance is lower. So my car insurance was like $62 a month. So I had like liability. And then I used half of what was left over to buy my furniture for an apartment. I moved in with my sister. I'm one of 5 girls. And so now here I am with an apartment. My friend is paying $1,200 for her apartment. I'm paying $550 because I have a roommate. I have a car. She's paying $250 for her car note and another $250 for insurance. I'm paying $62 a month because my car is paid off and my car insurance is low. Do you see?
Yeah.
Then like, if you are in the perfect time where you are either going to step over the cliff and have to climb your way back up, or you can start already ascending. And the key is not to add on more monthly bills. If you could save for a car, that'd be awesome. But don't get a blender bill, a mattress bill, a bedroom set bill. Pay for it in cash and sleep on the air mattress until you can. So that's what, if you start from there, that means most of the money you bring into the house You can keep that money for yourself. So you can stay home. It's a blessing to stay home and build from there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm Mari.
My question is my child, which would be my beneficiary, is under 18. How do you protect your assets, but still leave her as the beneficiary? Somebody talked about a revocable trust. Anything in regards to advice with that?
You would have to sit with an attorney. I'm not an attorney, okay. Right? But if you're wanting to leave her as your beneficiary, the truth is, if you're going to have a power of attorney and she's too young, you're going to need someone anyway. So start thinking now, who do I trust to help manage my finances in the way that I want because my child is under 18. So start thinking about that now, but you'd want to sit with an attorney to ask that.
Okay. Would your power attorney be your beneficiary, though? You're telling us to go and...
Well, your power of attorney is an adult. And a power of attorney doesn't necessarily have to be an attorney. It's just that you have the power to make the decisions that I want you to make when I'm either sick or not here, right? So that's a power of attorney, meaning like I can legally make the decisions as you. But they don't have to be an attorney, just someone that you've chosen. Your beneficiary is, here's my stuff. It belongs to you when I'm not here.
Correct, which would be my child, which is under 18. So who do I determine to be my beneficiary if she's...
No, she can still be your beneficiary. Okay. But I'm just saying that if you're worried, because I thought your question was that you were worried that because she's under 18, what's she going to do with this money? So you would want someone that you trust, like say your sister, your brother, whatever, who's going to be like, hey, I've got this $20,000 or whatever for you, and your mom wants me to give you $1,000 a month for the next whatever years. I'm going to make sure that happens. You see what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah, but definitely you want to work with an attorney for that, since your daughter is under 18.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Just want to say thank you. This was an awesome presentation. By far the best breakout session.
I'm going
to follow you. You're awesome. Is it, given like interest rates and debt and everything, is it smarter to lease, buy new, or buy used when it comes to purchasing a car?
Well, you're asking the wrong person. I don't believe in buying new cars. I don't. Because here's the thing. There's something called depreciation. This dress from Target, I believe, was $29.99. And if I had not already worn it and popped the tags on it, I bought this dress maybe 2 weeks ago. Guess what? I could bring it back and get back my what? $29.99. I get a car, get it for $5,000 or $10,000, whatever, brand new. Well, brand new, let's just say $40,000 brand new. Drive it off the lot. Decide 30 days later, I don't want it. I can't get back my $30,000. It has now depreciated, meaning that it is not worth what it was when I bought it. Cars can depreciate up to 20%. So let's just do easy math. If you bought the car for $100,000, that means it lost $20,000 worth of value. The dress doesn't lose that much value. So the reason why I don't like brand new cars is that it's like saying, here's an investment for you. It is guaranteed to lose money. Guaranteed. That's what a car is, a guaranteed loss of money. So instead, I like to get a car that is 1 to 3 years old in that range. So still fairly new, right? And I like to get certified pre-owned. Because what does that mean? My car right now is certified pre-owned. And guess what? The check engine light came on. I'm not worried. Want to know why? It is under warranty. It means that it is already pre-owned. My car was 2 years old when I bought it. So the depreciation had already mostly fallen off. So I'm getting it for the real value, and I still get the warranty of like a new car. So for 6 years, 100,000 miles, I think that's what mine is, I'm not sure, that I can bring it in if something is wrong with it. So that's what I would suggest, a certified pre-owned car, because they vet those cars to be just as good as new cars, except for you don't have to pay that depreciation. All right, thank you.
Tiffany Alici is the best-selling author of The 1 Week Budget and Live Richer Challenge. Her company, The Budgetnista, has helped more than 800,000 women worldwide collectively save more than $100 million, pay off more than $75 million in debt, purchase homes, and transform the way they think about their finances. To learn more, please visit budgetnista.com. Thanks for listening. We hope you found the session helpful. And we invite you to tune in for more best breakouts from the Conferences for Women.